And I guess just start off with why you're running for governor.
Well, the reason I'm running is I think the state right now needs the skill sets that I bring to the table. Our policy situation is quite a mess. Our economy has not been well managed. Our fiscal situation has been thoroughly mismanaged. Even our crime and law and order has been handled in a way that's less than ideal. And so I think there's room. I think there's a need right now for some fresh perspective, some fresh blood. I come from the business sector, even though I've been involved with politics and I understand it well. But I've built and run sizable organizations. I know how to run a large organization, know how to build high-quality teams, all the things that we're going to need to have a highly effective governor. You know, we haven't had highly effective governors always in this state. And I think at this point in our history, we really need one.
Who is the last highly effective governor, in your opinion?
Well, I could tell you that, and I guess I should. It's an inconvenient answer from a partisan standpoint. I think the last one that was highly effective was Tony Knowles, and that's because he was a good manager and a good leader. Now, sometimes he led the state in the right direction. He was like the last of the Mohicans, the last Democrat that really understood the need for a healthy private sector economy. And he was refreshing in that way. But he also had liberal left leanings in terms of growing budgets and that sort of thing. Luckily, during the 90s when he was governor, there wasn't a lot of room to grow budgets. But his policy direction sometimes I didn't agree with. A lot of times I didn't agree with. Sometimes I did. But his effectiveness as a leader and a manager I admired.
And what made you decide to kick off your campaign here in Ketchikan?
Well, it is my first official campaign event, and I figured, well, why not kick it off in the first city? Yeah, I've been to Ketchikan a number of times over the years. I'm no stranger here. I've always enjoyed it, and I see my campaign very much as a statewide campaign, and you know, in a way, this signals a statewide focus, and it signals an understanding and a concern for Southeast Alaska.
Okay, and a big concern for Southeast Alaska, especially when there's somebody from Anchorage running for statewide office, is what are you going to do to our ferry system? Do you understand the importance of the ferries to the region, and what would be your thought on maintaining that infrastructure for this region?
I do understand very well the importance. I mean, it's basically the equivalent of the road system in other parts of the state. And it's essential that that service be maintained and that it be affordable to Southeast residents. Now, I think there's ways to operate it more efficiently. I think there's ways to operate it at a lower cost that requires less of a subsidy from the state. You know, we're not going to be able to afford the things that we've afforded in the past, and so we're going to have to get smarter with how we manage. But I think there's a lot of opportunities there. I'll tell you a real quick story. In the mid-2000s, my company was hired by the Marine Highway System, make a long story short, to do supply chain management as part of a supply chain management, meaning procurement and warehouse operations. That's what my largest company does in the private sector. And so this was a pilot program to say, all right, well, let's try this out and see if it can save money in the public sector too. And the powers that be selected the Marine Highway System as the trial test bed. And so we stood that program up, and it worked well operationally. It was really successful. On an operational basis, we saved the state about 20%. On the cost of goods side, we did pretty well too. And it was a smashing success on the merits. But it threatened the public employee unions. The success of it was a very inconvenient fact, and they could see where that might be headed, you know, as far as the program expanding and maybe other sorts of functions coming under that type of a concept. So they basically drove it out. But the interesting thing is that the Marine Highway System, kind of quietly, the people that ordered parts and equipment and materials and supplies and that sort of thing that dealt with this loved the program. They saw that it worked a lot more efficiently and saved the Marine Highway System money. But because of the politics, it was driven out. The sunset was not extended because of the opposition of the public employee unions, and the ferry system was the worse off. It's operating at a higher cost now as a result. So that's just a little microcosm. But there's all kinds of vested interests that prevent the ferry system from operating in a way that doesn't require quite as much subsidy.
What specifically could you do as governor to make it operate more efficiently and with less costs without affecting the service?
Well, I think there's just a lot of things. I don't think there's any one answer. I think that just kind of a business-oriented mindset needs to be applied to it. I think some firmness is going to be needed to kind of stand up to some of the entrenched interests. I don't have a business plan prepared for the ferry system, but I'm confident the state of Alaska as a whole, you know, if you're looking at identifying spending reductions, it's what the Air Force calls a target-rich environment. You know, we spend money on things that no other state spends money on, and we are right now 3 times the national average in terms of per capita spending, number one in the nation. And number two isn't even a close second. So it is truly a target-rich environment. The Marine Highway System has all kinds of opportunities for operating more efficiently, but requiring less public treasure to do so. Now, I'm not saying that we could get it on a profitable basis, but rather than tens of millions of dollars a year to prop it up, I think we could improve on that number.
And you arrived in Ketchikan by plane, I'm assuming?
I did.
And so you experienced our current ferry ramp woes.
Mm-hmm.
And the state has a plan in place to spend upwards of $90 million, I believe, to improve access to the Ketchikan International Airport. And part of that is a redundant ramp on both sides so that mm-hmm. if the ramp goes down, the ferry still land, et cetera. Is that something, and the project hasn't actually started yet, so that's something that potentially the next governor could affect spending on. Is that something that you would support continuing to spend state funding on?
I absolutely would. I mean, that is right on the sweet spot of what the public sector should be doing. And, ports and roads and transportation systems in general is a very, very legitimate government function, and I would take that seriously. I mean, one of the first things I would do in Southeast is get the Juneau Road back on track, which would tremendously help the Marine Highway System. And the project that you just described would be a high priority, too.
You talked about a few of the main points that you would hope to highlight in your campaign. What are some of the others that you really think are important for Alaskans to understand?
Right. Well, it's pretty much 3 main areas of focus. First of all, it's getting the economy moving. Again, this economy has been flat to down for the last 3 years, and for the past 20 years, it hasn't been performing all that well. I mean, we've seen net out-migration since the mid-1980s. Our natural birth rate keeps our population from declining, but our young people have to go outside to find their opportunities in to a degree that's not what we would like to see. So we need to get the economy moving. I've done a lot of that in my career. I was the person that was named as the founding president of the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation. That was in Anchorage, but the and it just so happens to have been in Anchorage, but the principles that we pioneered there are applicable on a statewide level. And so we can, I am convinced we've got tremendous opportunities in this state. And I was talking to some of your business leaders in Ketchikan yesterday, and the opportunities here are just amazing. It was very enlightening for me to see what all, is kind of being contemplated and is frankly realistic. So there's great reason for optimism about the economy. The second area of focus is, you know, the financial situation, the state's fiscal gap. And there the solutions, it's a little more complicated, and I'll try not to ramble on with a lot of wonkish talk. But basically the solution is not that difficult. The difficult part is the politics. And if we could somehow solve the politics, I think the solution kind of almost writes itself, in my opinion.
That's usually the way it works.
Yeah. So Basically, what it boils down to is demonstrating to the public that we're making meaningful budget cuts. And meaningful budget cuts, and particularly to the state operating budget, the capital budget has already been cut to the bone. The state operating budget has been largely untouched, and if you take out the university cuts, it has been completely untouched in the aggregate. So we need to earn the right to take some of the other steps by showing that we can get this bloated government down to size. So that's job number one. And I'm not talking about draconian cuts. I think it needs to be kind of steady, reasonable, intelligent cuts year after year over a multi-year period to kind of get it slimmed down. If you take a meat cleaver to the budget, you'll just make a lot of mistakes and end up having to restore a lot of programs and maybe even lose political support for the cuts that are needed. So once that job is well underway, and that job, by the way, requires a strong governor, particularly in this state. But really, anywhere, legislative bodies are not real good at cutting budgets. If the governor is not leading and not wielding the line item veto pen that the governor of Alaska has, the budget just isn't going to get cut. So we need a governor that's committed to cutting the budget if we want to slim government down to size. Once that job is well underway, we need to kind of revamp how we manage the permanent fund and manage it more like a large foundation or a sovereign wealth fund. And take a stable amount of earnings out of that fund. And the answer is around 5% a year over time is what large foundations can spin off to the stakeholders in earnings. Well, our permanent fund right now is at $61 billion. If we took 5% a year steadily over time, that would result in over $3 billion in available revenue. If we dedicated, say, a third of that to the dividend program, that leaves $2 billion that is available to close the fiscal gap. And if you look at that, the numbers work. You assume reductions in state government. That closes the fiscal gap in its own right. And then you plug in the permanent fund earnings. Depending on the oil prices and all that, there might be still a very small gap left. It just depends on your assumptions. But what we would need from the budget reserve funds would be very small and sustainable and bridge us across to new oil production. There's been tremendous amount oil reserves discovered on the North Slope in the last 2 to 3 years. And that's a game changer for Alaska. Just the known reservoirs and the new geology that's been discovered, just the known reservoirs that are proven, bringing those online in the next 3 to 5 years would cause an 80% increase in pipeline throughput. It would take us from a quarter capacity to nearly half in terms of pipeline throughput capacity. That's a game changer. That completely changes the economic outlook of the state. And the geology that they've discovered, they're just starting to scratch the surface on that. So, that's more oil discovered than at any time in the last 2 to 3 years than at any time since the Prudhoe Bay discovery. And that's one of the reasons, not the only reason, that I'm so bullish and upbeat on our economic future. If we can keep our tax policy stable, not present ourselves as though we're a banana republic to the oil and gas sector, and be a stable, mature political jurisdiction that's noted for doing things right, and being predictable, I think with those sorts of things, and also a little creativity. Those at these oil prices, those projects aren't going to be slam dunks or no brainers, as they say in business. They're going to require some creativity to sit down and say, okay, we owe you some oil tax credits. That's a legal obligation. Let's put those on the table. We have infrastructure spending through ADA to build roads and pads. If we do these things, will you commit to building this, bringing this new reservoir into production? That's the approach I took at the Economic Development Corporation and non-oil sectors, and it would absolutely work like a charm in the oil patch. And then that puts us in a position where we can kind of maintain our special luxury of not having to pay broad-based statewide taxes and still afford a healthy dividend. The formula I was just talking about, that if you took one-third, for example, and dedicated it to dividends, on year number one that you did that, the dividend would be several hundred dollars per person higher than what the governor arbitrarily set it at. So I think we need kind of a more long-term. People talk about a fiscal plan. It's a term that's thrown around a lot, but what I've just described is a fiscal plan, and it pencils.
Okay, so you are not in favor of any additional taxes. You would prefer to use the permanent fund earnings, 5% of that. I just want to make sure I understand what you're saying. I'm summarizing here.
No, I appreciate it.
To bridge the gap and along with some budget reserves, and then you believe that oil prices will increase, and then the state oil revenue will go up as well.
I don't know that oil prices will increase, but oil prices tend to go in very long waves, and I think they're going to be in this $40 to $60 a barrel trading range for as far as the eye can see, indefinitely. But yes, you're right. I do not see a need right now for statewide taxes. You know, before a couple 3 years ago, I was pretty much resigned that we were going to have a broad-based tax to keep from going bankrupt. You know, and I even said so publicly. But two things have changed since then. One is the oil reserves that have been discovered on the North Slope that completely changed the fiscal outlook. The second thing is that the permanent fund in the investment markets has gone on a tear. And at that time, the permanent fund was mid-40s, $45 billion, you know, give or take a couple of billion. Pretty soon we're talking big money, right? But it's now over $60 billion and growing. And that completely changes the options that the state has to fund the fiscal gap even short term. So my philosophy is you don't levy heavy taxes on the public if it's not necessary. You don't reach into people's pockets and pull out money if you don't really need it, if you have other good options. And, that's my feeling. I'll put it to you this way. We want to preserve that permanent fund dividend program. It's a very special thing in this state, and it is very important to families. It's important to businesses, too, when it's spent. But the day that we have to levy, say, a statewide income tax in order to afford a dividend, the day that we have to tax each other in order to pay each other, we no longer have a dividend program like we've had before. We have a big social program. At that point in time, we've got a state that Bernie Sanders would be proud of.
So you're kicking off your campaign in Southeast. We talked about the ferry system. What is your understanding of some of the other issues that are important specifically to Southeast Alaska?
Well, I think by and large, it's the same issues that are important to the rest of the state. I mean, there are some special programs down here like the Marine Highway System that are particularly important. But otherwise, I think kind of resolving and depoliticizing the dividend program, getting our fiscal house in order, I think those are things that will benefit every part of the state. The economic development principles that I would bring to the table would touch off some good economic growth in Southeast as well. Just the projects I heard about yesterday are really exciting, and they're doable.
What are some of the things you heard about from local?
Well, I don't want to steal their thunder. They gave me the courtesy of sharing some of their private plans, but you'll probably be able to guess it involves more shipbuilding capacity. It involves naval support services and really a whole bunch of things. I was just dazzled by the range of projects that are potentially feasible.
Okay. And one thing that comes up on a fairly regular basis and it riles up people in Southeast is the concept of moving the capital. Do you have thoughts on that?
Well, it's the historic capital of Alaska, and I would be reluctant. I would not lead the charge to move it. Let me put it that way.
Good to know. And somebody who knew I was going to be interviewing you today wanted me to ask you about this, and it's actually is a really good question. So last year you worked with the Accountability Project.
I did.
And that helped fund some negative ad campaigning for Ketchikan's House District race, and there were a lot of local folks who didn't appreciate that and didn't work. And the Republican candidate said that the negative ad campaign actually hurt his chances. What are your thoughts on that? And then is that a tactic you plan to use in your campaign?
Yeah, good question. Good question. And I'm happy to field it. So looking at that campaign, it was absolutely the right race to be in. It was an important race. Whether or not it was winnable at that point in time, I'm not sure. But what we our messaging and what we were putting out there in terms of facts and the positions that we were pointing out were spot on. And a number of our mailers, it was mostly direct mailers, a bit of radio, well, a fair bit of radio, too. And that was not controversial. But we did about four mailings. Two of them were spot on. You know, they were pitch perfect. Two of them were a little too cute. And I take responsibility for that. In politics, I've been running independent expenditure campaigns in legislative races now for about four election cycles, and we've won a lot more than we lost. But sometimes you make mistakes, and what we misgauged, you know, what we did was kind of with the mailers, you know, we had themes like Ketchikan needs a workhorse, not a show horse, and we showed the opponent on a horse. You know, kind of photoshopped on a horse. And in politics, what you have to do is you have to cut through the clutter, and you have to get people's attention. You have to draw attention to your mailer. And we were thinking that people would take it humorously and still get the point. Well, what I learned is that in small towns, even if somebody disagrees with your politics, they oftentimes don't want to see you, you know, feel like you're being picked on. And so, important lesson for me in terms of smaller communities. Now, that campaign would not have been controversial in other parts of Alaska, for example, in other parts of the U.S. But in smaller communities where you have those personal relationships, it's lesson learned. No, and I'll say one more thing, if I could. Mm-hmm. No disrespect was intended. We really were not trying to belittle our opponent in that race. We actually did think it was a humorous way to present it. So our heart was in the right place. We just kind of had a little blind spot there in terms of how to message to smaller communities. I had a nice conversation yesterday about that with Bob Sievertson. And we talked back and forth and basically agreed that yeah, the messages and the points that we were making were spot on a couple of the mailers. They backfired. And I apologized to Bob for any damage that had done.
Okay, so no plans to repeat that?
No, my campaign is really going to be about optimism. It's going to be upbeat. You know, and I'm going to differentiate myself as somebody that has the right solutions. The other people that are in the race, the ones so far, and even some of them that are kind of contemplating it, they're good guys. There's not a single one that's in the race or thinking about entering that I would want to say anything bad about.
Not even the incumbent?
Well, now I'm talking about the Republican primary.
Okay.
I've got some criticisms of the incumbent. You know, the governor is an affable fellow. He's a likable fellow. Unfortunately, the policies are wrong. If the policy mix was right, I wouldn't spend the time and treasure to run. But we're going in exactly the opposite direction in all important ways. And being likable and affable doesn't make up for that. So that's the worst thing that I have to say about it.
What do you think is one of the biggest mistake that the current governor has made in his time in office?
I think the biggest mistake is to be unserious about cutting the budget, and on the one hand, and vetoing the dividend on the other hand, and thereby politicizing it. You know, what he said with that veto is it's no longer a formula-driven program. Families no longer have kind of a set piece of the action from their state's oil wealth. The dividend is now what I, the governor, say it's going to be, what I think it ought to be, and that was a grave error. And that really poisoned the well for the other fiscal solutions that we need to adopt.
Okay. And what are your thoughts on his decision to expand Medicaid?
Irresponsible. Thoroughly irresponsible, and we're just beginning to see the budget impacts of that. You know, it was put out there as of minimal budget impact. That's already been proven false. And going forward, if there aren't changes made, it's going to be a real complication in terms of addressing our fiscal gap.
So you would roll that back?
I would not have done it in the first place. Rolling it back's a little harder because now we have, you know, tens of thousands of people that depend on it. But there are some things we can do. We've got a lot of optional components that we've opted in on the Medicaid program, and you know, I think we could if we get the go-ahead from the feds to do some experimental things in Alaska, get some waivers for them, you know, we could look at some of the income limits. We could look at whether or not people qualify for other programs that have opted into to Medicaid. I think there's some things we could do to bring the cost down. But to actually roll it back needs to come at the federal level. And I'll confess to you, I'm sorely disappointed in our senior senator for being a roadblock. I mean, she could have repealed Obamacare. She was the one vote that could have repealed Obamacare and then put the Republicans in a good bargaining position to sit down with the Democrats and come up with a better plan that's not bankrupting the state's exchanges and not horrifically driving up insurance costs for the private sector. My company has... we're struggling to provide health insurance because we've seen just massive increases in recent years because of Obamacare. The insurers have to make that up somewhere, and all the mandates and all the bells and whistles that come with Obamacare have made coverage unaffordable. And that's what's getting lost in this. People spend a lot of time thinking about Medicaid, but what about the family that has had their copay, their premium copay triple over the last few years? That's of equal importance.
Okay, and so you're starting your campaign here in Ketchikan. What's your plan from here as far as the campaign goes?
Well, it's still early on in the campaign. It's very early days. I'll be up in Fairbanks next week and speaking to a Republican women's group up there and kind of making the rounds and doing some other things. I'll be out in the Mat-Su a little later in October. I'm just going to go around the state, learn more about the state, like I have here in Ketchikan. I've learned a lot in 2 days here. It's been great. And I think it's going to be a fun experience to meet Alaskans in a whole wide range of communities doing a whole wide range of things. It's dawned on me here this week as I've been in Ketchikan that, you know, this could be fun.
Well,
it won't all be fun, but there'll be fun parts.
There will be moments.
the next big thing, too, at this point in time, given the early timing, I'm putting a big emphasis on fundraising. I've already put personal cash into the campaign, and I'll be out looking to raise money, and you know, give people a chance to donate in 2017 as well as again in 2018.